Good afternoon, folks. It's that time of the day again, time for the elephant in the room here on WJAS 1320 AM and 99.1 FM Talk. This is your host, Sam DeMarco, and we are here today. We have a great show for you on this beautiful Saturday afternoon. Joined in studio by my trusty executive director, John Schneider, the Calvin Coolidge of executive directors.
Thanks, Sam.
You know, if I told him that I had a bet that I could make him say three words, he would just reply, "You lose." Okay. We're also joined, you know, by our producer.
You gave him a chance to talk, and he literally said two words. You literally gave him open field to talk, and he literally just said
Thanks,
two words.
Thanks, Sam. Right? Yeah. There you go.
All day to talk. He volunteered two words.
And that's our producer, folks, Dazzling Daryl Grandy. Daryl's with us here to make sure that everything that we talk about with our guests in studio today gets out to you folks over the airwaves. So, hey, let's get this show started. I am also very pleased to announce a special guest we have on the show today. He's joined us in the studio, and that's Richard G. Joel, known to his friends as Dick Joel. And Dick was the 8th president of Grove City College, which is the Christian Liberal Arts College in Grove City. He's a 1967 Grove City graduate, and he assumed the presidency in the fall of 2003 after a very successful career in law and business. In June 2015, he was appointed to a two-year term as commissioner of the Pennsylvania Gaming Control Board by Speaker of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives at the time, Mike Terzai. Now, immediately before becoming president of Grove City College, Joel was the Pittsburgh director of Navigant Consulting Incorporated, which was the nation's largest forensic accounting firm. We're going to have to turn him loose on the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania and see what he can find, right? So Dick is also known throughout the Pittsburgh region for his leadership in numerous civic groups. Prior to assuming the presidency, he was also very involved in Pennsylvania politics and held the position of finance chairman for the Allegheny County Republican Party. I keep trying to drag him back in, folks. He gives me that marky Michael Corleone, you know, just when I thought they dragged me back in, you know. Now, as a student at Grove City, Dick served as the Student Government Association president and editor-in-chief of the student newspaper. He did that while also winning multiple varsity swimming championships. Dick also was a member of the Kappa Alpha Phi fraternity. He capped off his time at Grove City in 1967 when he was selected as Omicron Delta Kappa's Man of the Year and graduated with honors in political science. After completing his undergraduate degree, he earned his JD from the University of Michigan Law School. In 1989, he was inducted into his college's Swimming and Diving Hall of Fame. Dick, welcome to the show.
Sam, thank you very much. By the way, I have one Calvin Coolidge comment, too.
Okay.
I enjoyed that. A week after that happened, a lady was at the White House with his wife, and Silent Cal came back from church. And the lady who knew the president said, "Well, what was the sermon about today, Mr. President?" He said, "Sinning. What did the preacher say?" "He was against it." That about summed it up. You had one, and that other Cal one is a hilarious one, too.
Oh, that's a good one, too. Yeah. Oh, you know what? There's a man that does not get the credit he deserves for the job that he did and for understanding his role, as a president of the United States at the time.
Right. Correct.
I mean, really, but we're going to have you back on someday to talk about him and give our folks a little view into the history there and, the presidency of Calvin Coolidge. But, hey, we got you today, and I didn't talk about it earlier. I didn't in that long, illustrious introduction I did. I didn't talk about the key role that you have been playing for the years here. You're helping raise money for Republican candidates across this Commonwealth and elsewhere. I mean, you've raised money for presidents, governors, senators. Right. I mean, millions of dollars.
Right.
You know?
I've enjoyed it. And along that, it's been 40 years. Except for the 11 years I was president of Grove City, I wasn't permitted because trustees said, and they were right, you only have one client to raise money for. I could get my own.
That's college, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I was at college. But as soon as I stepped away in 2014 and came back, I kind of reinvigorated myself in a number of races. Mm-hmm. And actually, I have 8 candidates in this cycle, and I'm finance chair of 3 of them. And this has been the busiest cycle of fundraising I've ever been in. Next year is going to be a sleeper because there's almost statewide and House and Senate, state. House and Senate, almost nothing going on. There will be a judge, Superior Court race, because the gentleman who went to the Supreme Court that was vacated, and they'll have a race for that. So that's the only statewide one.
Well, no, let me make you aware of a couple more. Next year will be the retention races for the three Supreme Court justices that were elected by the Democrats back in 2015.
Right.
You know, when they got the money from Johnny Daugherty, the convicted, felon, a former union leader. Yeah, out there in Philadelphia.
That was a fateful turn for the court.
Yes, it was.
No doubt about it. As we both know, retentions are very hard to come by. It was in the state constitution for the first time, 1968. There's only been two or three common pleas judges recalled, one of them for moral turpitude, and the other two got on the wrong side of a property tax question. The first two guys on that.
What court was Joe Nigro in?
When he was recalled
over the pay raise.
He wasn't retained.
He
wasn't retained. And Sandra Newman, Justice Sandra, was up too, and she got through, but Mr. Russ Nigro did not. But that's incredibly rare. It's possible, but that's a difficult stretch. But the citizens still have that right under the Constitution to come back. We'll call it a reconsideration.
We're going to see what happens. But so there are things up next year, as well as I believe we might have 10 or 11 common pleas court races here in Allegheny County.
Right.
You know, so it's going to be a very, very interesting time. And I think, that's one of the things, Dick, when I ran as a county councilman, my first race was back in 2015. And in 2019, I was on the ballot to run for re-election, and then folks had come to me to try to fill the interim term as a county chair for Raja. Right. And, I tried to beg off because I didn't have the bandwidth, and all these people claimed they were going to help me, and very few of them are around anymore. But so they got me in here, okay? But you don't get a break. If someone that does what I do or does what you do, you don't get a break because there's an election every year. You know, so when this presidential election is over here after November 5th, you and I, we're not going to be able to relax because I'm going to have people beating down my door wanting to introduce themselves to me, telling me how they wanted to run for statewide office or for county office next year, and you're going to have folks coming to you begging because you've been so successful with your help in fundraising.
I do get calls. I don't seek somebody out. I wait if somebody comes to see me, and I'm always glad to. My door's always open. I'm still employed and work in the forensic accounting world for an international firm. A lot of my primary work is. But this is my avocation, which I've followed. And I've had as much fun sometimes in what we'll call small races, and it's never small to the person running or to the constituents that are eligible to vote. But one of my favorites was Vince Gaskeb for county council back in 2000 or 2001. And Vince I think he's deceased now, a great dad.
Oh, his dad but, passed away, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Vince is a great guy.
Right. And
with the airport authority, yep.
Right. And so Bud and I had more fun putting that race together and Vince running. And you're right, he's now permanently with the airport authority.
Yeah, he's vice president of government affairs. I mean, he does a phenomenal job down there. I've worked with extensively, with Vince and his team.
Right.
As a matter of fact, I'll be out there, folks. I'll be out there Monday. Being on council here, I have the benefit of being able to attend a sort of a construction tour to sort of see how far construction is currently on our new airport terminal, the parking garage, and the other facilities that are coming up. So I'm excited, and maybe we'll talk about that next week. But so I hope to see Vince when I go down there on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
But, as we talk about this, we are in an incredible election year. And Dick, we go out and our candidates tell us, and we've heard it before, this is the most important election of our lifetimes. But really, you've been around. You graduated from college in 1967. I got out of the Marines in 1980, then went to college. But in all these elections, I've never seen our country, closer to a point where I fear that we could lose it than today.
Right. No, you're right. Now, we're talking primarily about the presidential race.
Yes, sir.
Obviously.
Yes, sir.
And the distinction and differential in policy of folks to consider is extraordinary. For years, we had people that were pretty similar, or they were R's and D's, but that has not come to pass now. And so the impact of which path forward, and you can choose, is significant. And you know, we will see. I think Trump still has, I think he still has the advantage. I think he's retained the advantage. And you hear this from other professionals, and I listen to the pros and have my own opinions and kind of see if it makes sense with what they're saying. But Trump actually underpolls. You know, there's and that's true. That's been demonstrated arithmetically. And because some people are afraid to say, I'm going to vote for Trump, there'll be somebody ready to punch him in the nose, you know, when they step out of their house.
Oh, yeah.
And so he has always, he has underpolled in the last two big elections. And I think even if you're adjusting for a 1 or 2 point underpoll now, unless something unusual happens, you know, who's got the October surprise, I do think he still has the inside advantage. Of course, we've got close races in the State House, State Senate, U.S. House, U.S. Senate. On the Pennsylvania side, I think Josh Kale, State Representative Josh Kale, who's the head of policy in the House, has really been given the task, not a chore, but the task of taking the House back. They only have to flip it by one vote. It'd be great to flip it by two or three.
Right.
And I think that's more than probable. What's happened with the Democrats when they took the majority by one this year, they have a number of Democrats who have retired suddenly or got another job and left. And so for only about half of the year have they actually been in the majority. So if they're not carrying the majority number, they just simply haven't met. So the first of this year, the first 2 months, the House never came into session except to organize because the Democrats didn't have the controlling votes. It's been crazy that way.
Well, that started off immediately after the midterm elections.
Absolutely.
In 2022, yep. Where they took a break there and didn't come back. They came back in January, elected a new speaker. That was a mess.
Right.
You know, where you had Republicans sided
right.
with Democrats to elect someone that they felt would, you know, allow some of the ballot referendum questions, the amendments they wanted to put on the ballot, go forth. Turned out that that didn't happen, but the Democrats immediately upon electing them then went back into recess.
Right.
Okay, and you're right, for the last 2 years.
Well, they claimed there were a leak in the House roof, in the House
This
chamber.
Is the last one, right, yeah, right, this is the last one, yeah. Right.
And they couldn't come back till the leak was fixed. But, you know, that was a good story, as far as it went. I do think the House goes back to the Republicans. There's been a lot of work done in some key races, and I think they take it back. I think on the Senate side, they probably lose a seat in the East, but I think Jen Dentini can pick up the Brewster seat out here. It's going to be close because her opponent is better known because he'd served in the House. But Jen is coming on. The money's starting to come in, and she's running a good race. So we'll see there. So the question is, will they have 28 or will they have 27, but still maintain the majority on the House side?
Yeah, I'm just concerned. I think so much, here we are 50-some days out from the election, and so much really depends on what happens at the top of the ticket, because right. that drives turnout.
And, well, it's in the McCormick race, in my judgment. If Trump takes Pennsylvania, and he's got to take it by 2 points or three or more, that's possible, then I think David McCormick wins. I think there's a tie in the turnout and how people will vote.
Well, I would agree with you there, but I'm concerned because, you know, we had the debate this past week, you know, and, you know, former President Trump, you know, walked into an ambush, you right. know, had to face basically three people mm-hmm. and debate them.
Right.
I'm going to be right up front and honest, you know, from a stylistic perspective, you know, he didn't look as well
right.
as the vice president did, who had locked herself in a hotel room for 5 days and prepared right. for it. I think the president may have been, you know, after devastating Joe Biden and destroying him so badly he had to leave the race, may have been a little overconfident or whatever. But
well, let's go back to that debate with Biden. Mm-hmm. In hindsight, it would have been much smarter to have that debate 2 or 3 days after the Democratic convention when Biden was locked in.
But the Democrats set that debate up.
Right.
They're the ones, because I think it was obviously a tell. They knew. Right. They no one wanted Biden to run for re-election.
But Trump could have said, you know, I want to see who the nominee is. I'll be glad to debate that nominee at midnight when the convention closes, or the day after, or the day after that.
You're right. That would have been a good way to handle that.
Right. I think they gave it up. Now, Trump in the debate, you know, his close was brilliant. Mm-hmm. It was heartfelt, and it's been viewed over 7 million times. I mean, it's really, you know, picked up a lot of attention. The first part of it, I thought he did well. The middle part and toward the end, Trump was being Trump, as we always like to say, because he is a non-traditional type of speaker. He's not canned. He's not, you know, little focus points. And he's had the best experts in the world informing him and coaching him, his sons, his daughter, you know, everybody that means something to him. And you just can't change Donald Trump.
Well, look, I think
style-wise.
Well, when I'm coming at this, I just think there were so many missed opportunities. You know, the very first question, when Harris was asked if the people of America are better off today than they were 4 years ago, she didn't answer. She
went aspirational.
But when it went to Donald Trump, all he had to say was, "My opponent can't answer that in the affirmative, because you're not better off. Gas is up 50%. Rent is up 22%. Groceries are up 22%. Mortgage rates have doubled, and we have chaos around the globe." He goes, "By no measure are you better off today than before."
But you know who should have jumped in first? The moderators. And said, "Wait a minute. That wasn't the question.
Exactly.
Answer the question."
Exactly.
And if you're in court, and I'm a lawyer, you turn to the judge and say, "Your Honor, make the witness answer the question."
Yeah, so he had there were opportunities there, right? He could have gone to the moderators. Now, obviously, you saw how biased they were. They have ruined debate. If I were a Republican candidate, I would never do another debate. As a matter of fact,
that's what Trump is saying now.
Yeah, but you know what he should do? Yeah. Harris is going to come out, and their folks are going to claim that he's afraid to debate her. He should say, "No, I'm not afraid to debate." He goes, "I think we should talk to the folks. So I want to call for her to come, and let's have a joint news conference where the press at large can randomly selected, can take and throw questions at us, and us have to respond and answer. But I'm tired of going into these rigged, you know, type debates."
Sure.
But so I thought there were a number of opportunities. On immigration, she baited him, and he was responding to crowd size when he should have been just saying, "Hey, in January 21, I turned a secure southern border over to you folks, and you immediately went about reversing my executive actions and orders. Then you lied about it for 3 years, claiming the border wasn't secure."
The greatest Congress proof of had to act is her famous, "No, the border is secure." But on the other half of the screen, there's thousands of people surging.
Yes, I mean, exactly.
The ability to do that, and we've seen that in commercials. We're going to see that more also. Well,
to sort of end that, because I don't want to dwell on the debate, but I just want to say that, look, it was missed opportunities. I believe that if he would have taken advantage of those opportunities, he could have put her away just as he had Biden. But we are where we are.
Right.
So I'm concerned about the next 50-some days, because I want him going out and speaking to the American people and telling them, "Hey, if she had answers to the problems that they've caused, why aren't they fixing them today?"
Right. Or another approach to that is, the problems that they cause, and the problems are self-evident.
Yes.
You're the one that caused it. How can you possibly fix it?
Exactly. Yourself? Yes. You know? And I mean, it's crazy. I have a plan. You're in office.
Right.
You know? So that's what made his close so powerful, is if you have this plan, why haven't you been doing it for 3.5 years?
She is historically, no question about it, been way to the left. For her to deny that now by her change in positions is like the old story, quacks like a duck, it looks like a duck. Doggone it, that's a duck.
You know, I saw her on Thursday. She did a rally down in North Carolina, and I watched her. I mean, she lied like 25, 30 times at the debate. But I saw her on Thursday at this rally in North Carolina, and she was just standing up there lying about stuff. She's still claiming Trump's with Project 2025. She's claiming he's going to do a federal abortion ban. They're claiming again he's going to cut Social Security, Medicare, all the lies that you hear. What we should be doing is just playing commercial after commercial after commercial of all the things that she said in her own voice and putting that out there, because she can go, I mean, listen, we are like, I don't want to say groupies. We live and breathe this politics stuff. So if a politician says something, you and I know about it like that, okay?
Right.
But the public in general does not. Mm-hmm. So she can walk around and she can go to a rally and she can claim that's not her position anymore. It doesn't matter. Those commercials with her telling us what her positions are and let the public go off of that.
There's been so much talking out of both sides of their mouth, mm-hmm. more than I've ever seen. And we use the word lie a lot now. It's been used so much, I think it's correct, by the way, to use it, but it's been devalued.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
been devalued. It's so much, and you know, in the old days, if you called somebody a liar, you might be in a duel. I mean,
yeah.
that's in
oh,
the
yeah.
old days.
Yep.
But it's been devalued. There's a new word that has to be found for it, in my judgment.
Well,
let's talk about ads.
Yeah, sure.
One of the most remarkable ads I have seen in a long time.
Oh, the McCormick ad.
I'm going to get to Devlin Robinson. He's got an opponent, of course, for state Senate 37th. And the only ad that this lady has put up, she said, I'm a teacher, I'm a basketball coach, this and that. And my life was going fine until it went dark the day that Devlin Robinson voted against abortion in Pennsylvania. There never was such a vote.
Exactly.
Never.
It's a lie. Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
Never. If there was a vote, there was a vote in the Senate on taking the idea that using state money.
Right. Taxpayer funded elective abortions.
Abortions, right. Was not a good idea.
Yep.
And that's not a law per se. That's just a sense of the Senate. But she then said, nope, he voted against abortion, period. That is not correct.
Well, it's an absolute lie. Right. And you're right. We need to find a stronger word, you know, that would grab the public's attention. And
well, a more descriptive word. Again, I'm saying mm-hmm. that word, sad as it is, has been devalued. And I'm sorry to see that, say that, but it has. I have to find another word.
Well, it absolutely has. And listen, it's a shame. I mean, this woman here, on August 31st, she was drinking in a bar in Clareton, came out of the bar, and 150 yards crosses to the other side of the road, goes up over two pedestrian pathways, up a hill, across a staircase, and shears off a telephone pole.
Right.
Okay. Witnesses call the police to the scene, and the police respond and come to the scene, but apparently she's not given a breathalyzer test or a field sobriety test. Right. Like I said, witnesses have seen her drinking, right? So I had put
I
out
have
a press
heard
release.
That, but I think that's descriptively accurate.
Well, I've seen the witnesses' affidavits.
Mm-hmm.
So I put out a press release that night just calling for officials down there to just retain all records and videos and body camera tapes and things of that nature because I was concerned why wasn't policies followed. Now, what you don't know is when she served on the Jefferson Hills Council, they had a solicitor there. Her solicitor there was Darren Gabriel. The solicitor for Clareton is Darren Gabriel. Now, we'll talk about another thing here. Mm-hmm. 3 days before she had that accident, she was cited downtown Pittsburgh for going the wrong way on a one-way street. I think it might have been Fort Pitt Boulevard. And she was cited for careless driving and something else. She ended up pleading guilty to the driving the wrong way, the one-way street. The attorney was Darren Gabriel. Okay? Listen, everyone, I don't say everyone, lots of folks get tickets.
Right.
You know, lots of folks unfortunately have accidents. I mean, we're happy that she's safe and that no one was hurt or anything like that. But one of the things that people buy on all parties and all measures don't like, they don't like when someone gets special treatment.
Mm-hmm.
They don't like when there's double standards.
Right.
You know, when they're held to one and right. someone's not held to the other. So
right. sure.
that's under investigation. Be looking into that further to find out what happens there.
Let's talk about the U.S. Senate. I think there'll be a take back. With Governor Justice Manchin's retirement, that if there's 33 seats up,
mm-hmm.
11 seats are Republican seats, and in most cases defendable. So where the action is on the Democratic side. The top one of the great ones is right here in this state, obviously, McCormick and Casey.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Baines, the junior senator from Montana. Is really has the job.
He's done a phenomenal job.
He is, and he's an amazing gentleman. The governor of Montana was his business partner. So the junior senator and the governor went into business together after they were done their education and working mm-hmm. in other areas. Interesting two gentlemen. But Payne's, he's done a good job of recruiting candidates, and I think this is the only time in the next probably 15 years, just on the breakout of which offices are up, that the Republicans had a clear and convincing chance to take back the majority. I think the House is still up in the air. It's a little more cloudy, and it's so close, it's hard to say. It'd be incredibly important, obviously, to hold the to take the Senate back if Mr. Trump doesn't win. That's going to be a very important thing to have happen.
Well, I'm counting on former President Trump to win Pennsylvania, and we're going to talk more about that Senate race right after we come back from the break here in a second. Folks, we're going to take a break here. This is Sam DeMarco, your host on The Elephant in the Room. Be right back. Folks, welcome back to The Elephant in the Room here on WJAS 1320 AM and 99.1 FM Talk. This is your host, Sam DeMarco, and we're joined in studio today by Dick Joel, former president of Grove City College, and, you know, a Republican financier extraordinaire. I mean, Dick has helped raise millions of dollars for Republican candidates in cycles, you know, going back, you know, decades. So, Dick, we were just talking before the break.
I've also done a few Democrats that I thought.
Oh, you have?
Oh, yeah. For
ladies and gentlemen, bipartisan. You know, Dick.
I'm not necessarily claiming that, but I've seen some great guys who asked me to help. I said, sure, I'll help you.
Well, hey, listen, you know, being that this is the elephant in the room and not the donkey, we'll leave those folks out. But hey, we were talking about the Senate race, and we have an incredibly important Senate race here in Pennsylvania. Now, as you said earlier in the first segment, you talked about hopefully if President Trump wins Pennsylvania by like 2 points, you know, then it's a good shot, good chance. Right. But Dave McCormick will be the next U.S. Senator from the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And he is so incredibly well-qualified. But, you know, if you watch the commercials and, you know, Bob Casey and Chuck Schumer and these folks have just dumped like $50 million in negative ads on Dave's head, you know, the entire summer. And so much of it is false. Like, they are attacking him on residency. They keep calling him Connecticut Dave. Now, here's a guy that's like 57, 58 years old. And lived in Connecticut 9 years of that time or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Dave's a seventh generation Pennsylvania, was born in PA and raised in Bloomsburg, where he was the son of two public school teachers. He's a West Point graduate, a combat veteran, and a successful business leader.
Well, let me talk about Dave very quickly. Mm-hmm. First of all, his mom and dad both had PhDs. His dad was a public school teacher, I think in Baldwin, years ago. And then he got his doctoral degrees at Pitt, I believe, and then he went to Bloomsburg College in the state system of higher education as a president. When Governor Thornburgh reorganized the state system in 1983, he named David's father the chancellor, the first chancellor of the state system. He went from there, his dad, to become the chancellor of the University of Minnesota, a gigantic university, mm-hmm. and the whole system reported to him under the way the law was structured in that state. His mom then later in life finished her PhD. So he was raised as a high school kid where his pop was running Bloomsburg. Mm-hmm. He was a great wrestler there. Yes, he went to West Point. He was in Gulf War I, and part of his duties, I think he left as a captain.
Yeah, he retired. Yeah. He received the Bronze Star.
Right. Part of his
there
duties
retired as a captain.
Was bomb removal in the ground to make sure the troops didn't step on the IEDs mm-hmm. or bombs. And I claim that's why 2 years after he was out of the military, he still was sort of bent over looking down.
It's a habit, right? You want
to. So used to that. So he then, and you know, he doesn't say much about this, but it's important to me as a college president and educator. He then got his master's and PhD in international relations from Princeton. And he came back to Pittsburgh with Stevie Schwartzwalder, who was the managing partner of the Pittsburgh office of McKinsey. Mm-hmm. And Glenn Meekham was there at the mm-hmm. time. A couple of other really outstanding guys came back to Pittsburgh. That's where I first got to know him. Meekham went on to form Free Markets, mm-hmm. and he brought Dave over with him and a couple other guys too. Dave eventually became, when they went public in 99, Meekham left, reinvested money, et cetera. Dave stayed on. He ran Free Markets, created a lot more jobs.
Right.
And then he handled the merger between
Ariba
and Free Markets.
Yep.
And that was the publicly owned, so that was a stock deal. Then he stayed at Ariba a little while longer. But then he goes to the Bush administration. And this is where he had an exemplary positions with Bush. Deputy Secretary of Commerce. He then went into the National Security Council. But then, for 2 years, was the Deputy Secretary of the Treasury for International Monetary Affairs. Mm-hmm. And ran the G7 and the G20. And when everything hit the fan financially in this country and in the world in 2009 and 2010, the Secretary of the Treasury, the Deputy Secretary for International Monetary
Affairs. I think it was 2007 and 2008.
Nope.
Or 2008.
No, it's 2009 and 2010 they got out of.
Well, Obama was elected in 2008, so Obama right. was in office in 2009.
Right. No. He had a principal hand in bringing things to stabilization.
Right. Under Hank Paulson, yeah.
Right. Under Paulson, the Secretary, and, who was his boss, and Tim Geithner, who was the head of the New York Fed, later Obama's Secretary mm-hmm. of the Treasury. Those guys, for the better part of 4 to 5 months, almost had no sleep. Two have written books, Paulson and Geithner, where they were throwing up sometimes in the morning. I mean, the pressure was unbelievable. Because we almost lost at that time the C word, confidence. The C word undergirds the capitalistic system. It's why you and I don't go down to our bank, the same bank, on 9 o'clock in the morning and say, I'd like my money back. And that the runs on the bank.
Well,
which
I
happened.
Don't go because I don't have any money, but I understand why you don't.
Well, even a dollar. But of course, that money's out circulating and loaned and all that.
Right.
So you have to have that C word, confidence. But that almost, they almost lost it. And it was their great work. When Dave went up to Bridgeport, about 3 months after, I had him back at Grove City College to give the John Howard Pugh Memorial Lecture on what had happened.
Mm-hmm.
Scariest, and I've heard and met a lot of people of great note, bringing them to schools and other mm-hmm. things. And it was one of the greatest and scariest lectures I've ever heard, how close we came to absolute ruin. And without their leadership. But it's interesting. Politicians never like to admit they have a PhD. I was an advisor to Tom Wolf on higher education funding. Tom was a wonderful gentleman to deal with. And he was a college professor. He had a PhD from MIT, London School of Econ, a master's. Econ at Dartmouth undergrad in the Peace Corps. And he understood higher education incredibly well. And finance incredibly well. And I remember him telling me that when he finished at MIT and he had the number one rated dissertation in America that he had written, that he had an offer at Harvard for a tenure track position in political science. But his dad begged him to come back to help him run the family business, which mm-hmm. he acceded to and then came back. So anyway, David has a PhD. He has a geopolitical mind. He has an incredible financial mind. And to be honest with you, his ascent to the United States Senate, and there's some very bright people in the Senate, you know, a few not, but there's some very bright people, would really add to the intellectuality and the ability of that great body to handle the kind of geopolitical and financial questions that they address.
Well, we lost a tremendous mind when Pat Toomey decided right. not to run for re-election.
On finance, especially.
That's what I'm talking about, right? And Dave would certainly be able to help fill that void,
right?
You know, that's been left, because certainly Bob Casey, whose claim to fame is he studies maps, you know,
right.
he knows where all 67 counties he claims
are. One thing
are
about Casey,
after 18 years in office.
If you did what politicians call opposition research on him, you'd find out he's a nice gentleman. You know, there's nothing floating around there, but there's nothing. Remember, I used the word nothing. And so for a fellow that's been in office for so long and has so little, let's say, to show for it, it's amazing. I can remember somebody saying that we have two senators today, U.S. senators, representing us. One is an empty suit and the other doesn't have a suit.
Yes. Listen, you know, I'm going to quibble with the nice guy thing. I know that's the reputation and that's what some folks say. But if you were really a nice guy, I think you could run a campaign without the blatant lies attacking McCormick that I've seen come from them. I mean, you know, the claim about fentanyl. You know, Dave, when he was at Bridgewater invested less than 3% in the investments in China. And if you're a global hedge fund,
right?
Okay, you're going to have investments all over the world. okay? And China is an emerging market. It's certainly one where you have it. But they had an index fund. They had 400 different companies that were invested in. This was legal fentanyl,
correct,
only for use in the Chinese market, and has not been identified by the U.S. as any stuff that came over here.
Moreover, it's like the company they invested in is a biological drug company.
Right.
They have all kinds of drugs that our companies have here in the United States.
Yes.
So it's a legitimate, big drug company.
Yes,
right.
Exactly.
And
HumanWell is the name.
Right, correct.
Of the company.
And in non-Chinese, right? It's got a different name over there. But it has, it's perfectly legal. It's perfectly necessary. Now, the problem is the term fentanyl has become so pejorative that it's easy to say fentanyl, so it's illegal. People are getting it over here. They're lacing the drugs with it, and they're dying from it. They're trying to make that. But I'll say it's not a defense of Casey, but the negative advertising is part of the game today.
Oh, I understand.
And I've seen so many. You have too, Sam.
But typically there's a kernel of truth somewhere in there, okay, you know, that then gets spun out, right?
It's hard to find the kernel sometimes, yes.
Well, and that's my point, you know. So I'm frustrated about that. It's on abortion.
I don't countenance it, but it has a certain success rate.
Well, I understand, but the hit's on abortion. I mean, Dave has six daughters, okay? He has always said...
That's between he and his wife because it's their second marriage each.
Right, but he's always said that he supports the exceptions.
Right, correct.
You know, and he believes that...
I've heard him say that personally.
Yes.
Right.
I mean, he said it in public. He came out, he did a commercial on it, you know. But you still see these folks claiming that he's for a federal ban. He doesn't support exceptions. I see these commercials on television. And it's like,
Well, I don't see the market over here, okay?
Uh-huh.
And the market over here on, after a ball game or on Channel 2 or 4 or 11, I have yet to see a refutation. I have seen it in social media, well done. I've seen it otherwise. I've seen it personally. But I think, unless I've missed it, I think we need to have stronger ads from him in rebuttal on, mm-hmm. On the main airwaves.
Well, look, all I can say is Bob Casey now supports abortion up until the moment of birth. And no senator has changed his position more than Casey.
Right.
And whether you're pro-life or pro-choice, you can't count on him to represent your
position. When that acorn fell from the tree, he didn't fall far from his dad, who was pro-life.
Mm-hmm.
And then it only was later on that he morphed.
Well, he morphed because he say or do anything to get reelected.
Right.
He's been collecting a taxpayer paycheck for over 30 years.
Right.
And he's a swamp creature who completely out of touch with Pennsylvanians while voting for Kamala Harris's liberal agenda 100% of the time.
When we're talking about changing your mind, and we get back to Ms. Harris on mm-hmm. this, I haven't heard anyone say this, but boy, I've thought it. How can on five key issues could you change your mind where 5 weeks ago you were completely different? We're not talking about 5 years. We're talking about 5 minutes. And then it's obvious why that happened.
Well, the answer is what Bernie Sanders gave.
Right.
He said, when they asked if
necessary.
He was concerned about her changing her position, he said, no, she's being a pragmatist and saying what she needs to say to win the election. So basically, he's countenancing her lying to us. You know, and folks, look, I'm all for people evolving or changing their position as more and more information becomes available or things of that nature. What I'm not for are people pandering and lying to your face to win a vote and then getting in office doing something completely different. And we've just gone through over 3.5 years of that with President Biden, who ran to claiming to be a moderate.
Yeah,
you know, and has governed like anything but. Exactly.
How'd that work out?
Exactly.
That was the whole theme of his inaugural address.
Mm-hmm.
That only lasted when the balls were over that night. And
yes.
He got back to the White House.
Yeah. So
at work the next day.
So, we folks, in addition to we have to elect, you know, Donald J. Trump and Senator J.D. Vance as next president and vice president of this great country, we need to elect Dave McCormick to be the next senator from the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. I mean, let's face it. When you have John Fetterman, you have him elected, the junior senator, and he's the one out demonstrating actual leadership. I don't agree with him on a lot of positions,
yep.
But there are positions I do agree with him on. Yep. One, it stands for Israel.
Yep.
Two, it stands on immigration. Mm-hmm. You know, Fetterman said that what you had coming across the border was effectively the entire population of Pittsburgh every single month. Mm-hmm. He saw it was unsustainable, but where's Casey?
Right.
You know, he's silent. When he does speak up, he's always the very last. And I wouldn't say he speaks up on it. He just releases a statement, mm-hmm. you know, that comes out. Folks, we live in the most consequential state in the union here. Critical swing
this
state
year,
here, and we have the least consequential senator.
Right.
That needs to change, and I believe it'll change if we elect Dave McCormick on November 5th.
No doubt about it. I had a hand in going to Connecticut mm-hmm. 3 years ago, having dinner with he and his wife to talk them into the – or put the bee in their bonnet about coming back to the public sector after he'd been in the public sector, private sector, but come back, take all that accumulated knowledge and wisdom and apply it for the purpose of
And it was following that, Dick,
office.
That he moved back to Pittsburgh in the fall of 2021.
Right.
Where he has lived since.
That's correct.
You know, I've been to his home. I can't tell you how many times, you know, for, you know, Christmas or for holidays or for receptions or things of this nature. And I mean, his wife, Dina, is just wonderful. You can't say enough good things about
it. Extraordinary businesswoman and extraordinary personality.
Oh, my gosh. She was at the C-suite level.
A lot of fun.
Goldman Sachs.
Right, right.
Yes.
She's now left. And
mm-hmm.
in fact, when she left last spring, it's probably the biggest single picture I've seen in Wall Street Journal in years with the article that she had left and gone with two of Goldman's greatest producers into their firm, and she's got a real expertise in bringing sovereign money,
mm-hmm.
from other countries that want to invest, and they'll put it in, and we'll handle the investment.
Mm-hmm.
So we make money from this; it creates jobs for her, and she's very good at that.
Yeah, no, she's phenomenal.
Because of her background,
but it's just a wonderful and warm woman. Dave is an incredible leader and a human being, and again, it's just. You know, listen, we've seen a lot of candidates come and go, and you know, some of these folks, you know, aren't necessarily what you see in the television ads, okay?
Right.
Dave truly is an unbelievable leader,
right?
You know, an unbelievable human being, and, you know, I feel blessed to get to know these
folks. If you called Central Casting and said, send over someone mm-hmm. who can be very competitive and represent Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, for all kinds of reasons, Central Casting would have sent Dave.
Yeah.
Just like a year ago, Central Casting gave us Joe Rocky
right.
to run against Sarah in a
Marauder. And you know what? Listen, this past Monday, I've had a bad week. This past Monday, we had a Board of Elections meeting, and the board overruled me and voted for satellite voting offices. Okay.
Saw that, yeah.
Listen, you know, in the primary, we had ballot return sites. We had six ballot return sites. It cost us $324,000 and change. We collected 2,779 ballots. That meant for every ballot that someone returned, it cost us over $116 for that one ballot, okay?
Right.
And now they're going to spend at minimum another $400,000 or more, you know, for these. And we also heard, here's some statistics. As of Monday, we had had 160,000 applications filed for the mm-hmm. mail-in or absentee ballots right. here in Allegheny County. Back in 2020, we had a total of 413,000. Of course, that was a pandemic.
COVID, yeah, right.
So, you know, our director of elections, David Voy, believes that, you know, we'll end up or top out at about 200, less than half. So my point in going through this, folks, in the math, is why are we spending all this money when the county is taking and spending more money than they're taking in already, okay, for something that's going to be used so little. Like I said, less than 3% of the ballots returned, or the ballots that were sent out, were returned at these ballot return sites. Now we have ballot return sites and satellite voting offices. I think it's too much. But I go into this whole thing, Dick. The point is I have people go to me, why didn't you do something? Why didn't you take a stand? I did.
Right.
We recruited Joe Rocky,
right?
And we ran Joe Rocky. And if someone wants to complain about it, they should complain to any one of the 146,000 Republicans who didn't show up to vote last November.
Right.
Because if Joe Rocky were the county executive, we wouldn't have these sorts of things.
It was a magnificent race. It was an uphill battle, you know, 2-to-1 differential in registration. But as we both know, I was Joe's finance chair.
Mm-hmm.
And Jim Roddy, late Jim Roddy, God bless him, you know.
Yes.
Always in bow my head. That was a wonderful gentleman there, was the campaign chair. Joe ran night and day, in and out. And as a rookie, I've never seen anyone more qualified and better at it, almost as a natural. And I should think about McCormick, also is a quasi-rookie. He's got very talented.
Yep.
But as good as I've seen at it for the first time, the equal of almost anybody I've ever seen. And so Joe came right down to the finish line and just barely didn't make it across. But he couldn't hang his head, nor could the party that backed him and you, Sam, I know.
Oh, we did everything we possibly could, right? Him. You know, it's just disappointing and frustrating because Dick, all of us put so much into these races, you know, and it's not because this is what it's not about. Well, we put something into these races. It's about we care about our community and we try to recruit and put forth the candidates that we believe can actually solve or address many of the problems the community faces. And help move it forward so we leave the community better than we found it. You know, and unfortunately, you have, there are too many voters who are busy working, raising their families, you know, distracted by other things that don't really pay attention.
Right.
And politics has become so tribal in the past, you know, 15 years.
You might say so.
Yeah. Right. I mean, it's, you know, people look at the D and the R almost like you look at Steeler jerseys and Browns jerseys.
Mm-hmm.
It's this team and that team. Whereas back in the day, you talked about how you supported, you know, former Democrats in some cases. You know, I can tell you that I know that in my life, I've voted, you know, way back in the day for some. I think I voted for Pete Flaherty, you know, back in the day. You know, my mom had worked on his campaign, that kind of deal there. But back in the day, you know, Dick Caligiuri. Back in the day, you voted for someone based upon the ideas that they presented, the policies that you believed that they would implement, right?
Right.
And now today, it seems it's almost, you know, entirely, you know, are they Republican, they Democrat, they independent? You know, what's their party registration?
Well, as we both know, the registration differential in the state now has improved from being a million down R's to the D's to about 340,000. Mm-hmm. Down R's to the D's.
Oh, yeah.
That is substantial. That is what lawyers call material. That is a big deal.
It's a tremendous deal. I mean, it is a seismic shift, you know, here. The thing that worries me, though, or my concern, and we only have like 4 minutes left, the thing that concerns me is that, you know, so many of our party stalwarts, the people who understand old school politics, who organized door knocking and postcard writing and things like that.
Right.
Many of them have, quite frankly, passed away, you know, and the Democrats have always had a more effective get out the vote infrastructure because our folks are all volunteers. You know, their folks are all from these nonprofit groups that get their money from the government.
And
they're from the unions,
and
things of that nature. So they have these people that they can rely on year after year after year. And we as Republicans, we start every cycle looking for new volunteers, people that are emotionally triggered, you know, from some particular issue or some individual.
To make it a smaller thing, the folks that enjoy and do funding aren't getting any younger either. Bob Asher, the great fundraiser
in the East. Oh, my
gosh.
Bob is a tremendous friend.
Bob has been mine for 40 years. His wife went to Grove City. Bob's 86.
Yeah.
I'm approaching my 80th birthday. And we have been, and I've been looking around for younger folks to get into. In some cases, it is a business. Mm-hmm. If you're a professional organizer and you put the things together, I can call people for money, and which I do all the time. But if you can put some, like a Carrie Dunn Sirianni, or there's three or four others that have been doing this and do it well. But some are getting long in the tooth. And we've been trying to, and have identified one case, I think another now, folks in their 20s that want to do that. And that's something I've been really working on, trying folks that want to get into that.
Well, we need to do that. That's part of succession planning, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, Dick, we have 2 minutes left. What would you like to say to our listeners here? And
well, in my years of meeting candidates and helping them, I've gotten to know some very interesting people.
Mm-hmm.
And in almost every case, authentic people who wanted to be doing the job, and in most cases were doing the job, and oftentimes very well. There's a lot, if you want to make a lot more money, unless you're dishonest, because some there are some dishonest politicians historically who have made money from the deal. But if
I can only remember the Democrats.
Yeah, right. If you want to make money, that's not the field for you. And it's night and day. It's like running the party.
Right.
You have to be at everybody's fundraiser, at everybody's picnic. It's a seven-day-a-week kind of thing. The hardest working politician, two of them that I ever saw, were Mike Fisher and Arlen Specter. If Arlen was coming to Pittsburgh, he was on the 6 a.m. plane out of Philly, and he might be in Oil City, and he'd finish for a fundraiser at 5 and still have a dinner at 7. I was his fundraiser in the West. Mm-hmm. Played a lot of squash with Senator Specter, exchanged books with him. He was a fascinatingly interesting guy, not conservative by today's standard, mm-hmm. but just, and when he was running the Judiciary Committee and Intel Committee, he was one powerful senator.
Yeah.
And he had a philosophy that was terrific on judges. He told me, he said, Dick, he said, I want the best liberal and I want the best conservative, really prepared, often law review type prepared, and I'm going to let them fight it out in the courts, which told me you could get conservative judges, and we did. And that big tent philosophy of Arlen's on the judiciary was extraordinary to see, and it was very effective.
Well, Dick, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. When we get started talking, man, you know, time seems to fly.
You bet.
Thank you so much. You're welcome back anytime.
Sam, thank you, and congratulations to the outstanding job and the many hours that you put in leading the party.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Folks, until next week, this is your host, Sam DeMarco, signing off for The Elephant in the Room on 99.1 FM and 1320 AM. Have a great weekend.